Welcome to the Court Report. I'm Jerry Price. I'm here with Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Manghart. And coach, welcome.
So glad to be here, Jerry.
So you got a lot to talk about. You are entering what is a very busy stretch of your season. You're coming off a very impressive road sweep. And there's with everything we have to talk about, let's talk about the last thing in the world you think. What do you think the last thing in the world I'm going to ask you about is?
Well, maybe that Sydney Jordan's a Pine Prize winner.
Nope. That's on my list of things to talk about.
I don't know then. I don't know.
I'm going to talk about the career arcs of Chris Saylor and Courtney Manghart, and you can even throw Bill Tierney in there.
So,
Chris Saylor won her 400th game.
It's crazy.
And I saw that you tweeted something to her.
Yeah.
So she's the women's lacrosse coach. Her first year, she was 3-9. Bill's first year, he was 2-13. Your first year, you were 7-23.
Yeah, indeed.
Her second year, she was 500. Your second year, you were 500. Bill's second year, he was 6-8, so just about 500.
Holy moly.
Your third year, team makes the NCAA tournament for the first time. Bill's third year, team makes the NCAA tournament for the third time. Chris's third year, made the NCAA tournament for the second time in program history, but the first time with her, and made it to the semifinals for the first time. So, one, and I said the same thing to Matt Madelon on the podcast, you know, what do you take away from your interactions with Chris Saylor, knowing that, you know, your sport and her sport don't really have a lot in common on in terms of X's and O's, but have you learned a lot from her in terms of running a program? And two, what does it mean when somebody can stay here? Because there's three coaches in Division I history who've reached 400 career wins. Cindy Timshall, who did it at Northwestern, Maryland, and Navy. John Donaski, who did it at Hofstra and now Duke. And Chris, who's been here the whole time. So she's the only one who's done it at one school. So what does it say about Princeton that it's kept her here that long?
Yeah,
and your interactions with her.
Yeah, I know Chris really, really well. She was one of those first five people that I met when I got down here in terms of she had already run a successful program here, was an Ivy League alum, much like myself. And just she took me to lunch at Winbury's literally day four on the job. So I've been closely aligned with her ever since. And her competitive excellence that's consistent is remarkable. The job is fatiguing. You have to find ways to stay energized. You have to find ways to be innovative. As you win, every game you win, your target's a little bit bigger because the other programs at Princeton win. And so the jersey's highly recognizable. And then obviously the fact that she's been able to stay engaged within this university for so long, I'm quite honored, I will say, to be anywhere near their arc. It's really two really remarkable coaches.
So we can segue from there to Sydney Jordan, because I was going to bring her up as well, winning the Pine Prize, which, if people don't know, is not a basketball award. It's the highest university undergraduate honor that there is.
Yeah.
And one of your players has won.
That's crazy. I have such great pride. I mean, I remember when she got admitted, the dean of admissions literally called me to my office phone and said, I just want to thank you for Sydney Jordan. That was one of the best applications I've ever read. And I said, well, she's pretty good at hoops too. And she's been a 3-year starter for us. And for Sydney to have earned, she's in a philosophy, which is mostly a male dominated field. For her to have earned such a distinction that unfortunately I have very little say in, so I would be her biggest advocate, but nobody really, this is a university academic award. I'll be celebrating her with enormous pride on Friday, and the president is actually going to be there before the game as well to honor her as one of our very own.
That's tremendous.
It's unbelievable. I mean, she is as smart can be, clearly, but she also doesn't do anything. You know, someone asked me what Sydney's best at, and my answer is everything. She's the best at headphone karaoke on our bus. She's the best at blocking out. She's the best student. It's just nothing. On her recruiting visit, she was the best dancer on the dance competition. So
we've had athletes who've won the Pine Prize before, but not a lot of them.
I would imagine not. I saw Kim at the president's town hall, and I asked her that, how many athletes, and she said, I don't think she's the only one, but it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, I remember others winning, but and I meant to try to check that out, and I will for next week, and we'll
see. Yeah, I remember when I was recruiting her, I said to her dad, like, this kid's made for Princeton. She took her SAT in the 7th grade, and he said, whoa. She took the SAT in the 7th grade because she has two older siblings, and it was that or paying for a babysitter that day. So just a really great family.
That's a very funny story. So let us go from that to last weekend when your team defeated Harvard and Dartmouth on the road.
Awesome.
And let's talk about Bella.
Yeah.
So Bella Allery puts up 41 points against Dartmouth. And by the way, what was that, 20-6 at the end of the first quarter?
Yeah, we were down by a lot.
It was either 20-4 or 20-6 at the end of
the quarter. It felt like 20. It might have been like 16. I think you're right, 20-4.
No, it was 20 to either 4 or 20-6.
I think it was 4.
Okay.
Gross.
So Bella scores 41. Before we get into the basketball, like the league race and all that kind of stuff, Bella now has games of 41 and 45. Bill Bradley had 11 games of 40-plus points in his career. Another fascinating thing that I figured out is Bella's season low right now is 16, which was Bill Bradley's career low is 16.
I saw that in your Tiger blog. It was well written.
And Bella is just at 29.3 points per game in the Ivy League. So my question that I asked in the blog, I'll ask you, is I never dreamed that anybody was going to get to 40 again after Bradley had done it so many times. And I've been watching so much Princeton basketball, and nobody really has ever gotten to 40. Can she get 58 in a game? And
yeah,
even if you,
I mean, I'd said,
I mean, not, she could if you set out your goal to
yeah,
simply get
at
her.
At the end of the first media timeout, we were down, as you said, by a lot against Dartmouth. And I looked at her and I said, I need you now. And, you know, as she would say herself, that was the point last year. You know, she was averaging about 11 shots a game last year and just sort of kind of went through. And I said I needed her now, just like that. And she scored our first 17 of our first 19 points.
I didn't. What did she have? 20?
She had 27 at half.
Yeah, 23 in the second quarter.
Yeah, I mean, and at halftime, we were like, hey, let's go, you know.
There's nobody else on your team, I guess Gabrielle Rush, who has a career high of even 23, and she did it in one quarter.
Yeah, I mean, so, and then after, of course, she was joking around yesterday, we were saying, B, 40 is a lot, like, you got it again, you know, and she said, well, I probably could have 50, I missed so many easy ones, coach, and I said, you know, she's just being, what she's doing is remarkable.
Well, here's something that's even more remarkable, so she's by far the leading scorer in the league, by far the leading rebounder in the league, this is league-only stats, because she hasn't played enough to qualify
yeah.
for overall stats, which I think you have to have played 75%
which
of
which she might not
games.
Get to because
right.
she missed so many.
She missed the first nine for – so imagine if she played in those nine. It was like, you know – but anyway. But she's also in the league's – among the league leaders in block shots, which is not surprising, but also steals and assists. Mm. She's in the top eight in both of those, eighth
wow.
and seventh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know
– yeah, she prides herself on helping us win and – she's, again, 40. You'd think we would, if someone got 40, it would be a night you'd be like, oh, God, I remember where I was. And it's just like how it happened. And literally at the end of the game, we were like, oh, be at 41. So, yeah, it's a fun journey for her and for us as a result.
So that game at Dartmouth was a 5 o'clock start, right?
Yeah.
And I forgot it was a 5 o'clock start. And I was here for women's lacrosse and was writing up men's lacrosse and had to get ready for men's basketball. And then I was like, oh, yeah, the women played at 5. And I went to check.
You were not happy, I'm sure.
It was in the third quarter. She had 35 already. Oh. And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, I was literally at the stat sheet in the second quarter, and I was like, well, B has 17. We have 19.
So it was a big weekend for you because you got the sweep, mm-hmm. not easy, and Penn stumbles in two overtimes at Harvard. So that now puts you back in position where if you win out, you're assured of a championship, which you weren't going into last weekend.
Yeah, and we beat Harvard on the road, which is their first league loss. In well over 2 years, but since they redid their gym. So it's a hard place to win.
So let's look at the big picture of the league race and what's coming up. So this weekend, home doubleheaders, you have two 5:30 games, Cornell Friday, Columbia Saturday, both teams that you beat on the road. Then it's the trip Tuesday, and then it's the Dartmouth-Harvard weekend at home. So that's a lot of basketball in 8 days. Huge games. Don't really, you know, You go to the Palestra on Tuesday for what's a huge game, but you also don't want to be looking past this weekend.
No, yeah.
So
we don't have the luxury of that. You know, we're still kind of we're on it. We're on the journey, and if we learned a lot after the Penn loss, and that was that Bella wasn't as dominant as we need her to be. Even though she had 22 and 17, she wasn't as dominant as we needed. And then we learned after the Yale game that we needed our secondary pieces to be to contribute. On the score sheet, on the rebounding statistical categories, and in other ways, and then, you know, we're just wanting to keep learning. We learned we had a lot of toughness beating Harvard at Harvard. So, yeah, one game at a time for sure with this group, and hopefully it takes care of itself.
So heading into the weekend, how do you stay focused on these games this weekend without sneaking a peek ahead to Tuesday night?
I hope the team trusts that that's my job. You know, my job is to ensure that this week of practice has included sort of pieces of enough of just us with enough of a little bit all them. I'm usually really laser focused on game plans, and so I think they do trust that. And for them, it's working closely with our strength staff and our athletic medicine staff to ensure that body is where we need to be and all that. So I hope it's just they have to trust me and I have to do my job.
So you've played each team in the league once. Everybody else has already played their travel partner. So after Tuesday, it'll be the, it'll just be the last
five, right?
Last two weekends.
Two. You're right. Yeah, it's two.
Yeah, yeah, because you have this weekend, then you have the Penn game, then you have two more after that. That's four, six. Eight. Yeah, seven.
Yeah.
Wow.
We have seven more total games. Yeah, it goes fast. But
What's it like the second time around? You know, you've done this for long enough. Yeah. Like, what's it like the second time around when you play these teams?
I hope for this particular Princeton team, they've sort of had to, it seems like they've had to kind of get their eyes on people, and they approach it with like, let me see how good they are before we kind of sink our teeth into the game, which has hurt us, of course. And so hopefully now, which I said after the Dartmouth game, you've seen now everybody in the league. You've gotten your eyes on them. You've been on the court with them. And we hope that helps them build momentum now so that the unfamiliarity no longer can be in any way eliminating. It's sort of like we know and now we do. So I think every year it's different, but I think like so in last year it was okay, it's hammer time now. Now we go to hammer people. You know, I think this year it's more like okay, now we know what people are about, and now we try to take care of ourselves so that we take care of it properly.
And then hanging over all that is the Ivy tournament. Yeah. So there's a 2-game drop between 4th and 5th,
yep.
And you know nothing is set in stone, obviously, mm-hmm. but it looks like you know mm-hmm. you don't want to slight anybody or jinx anything, but it looks like it's going to be Princeton, mm-hmm. Penn, Harvard, and Yale mm-hmm. playing at Yale, which yep. is predetermined.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the results between those four teams, they're all close.
All close, yep.
You know, no game has been double figures.
Crazy.
The Penn game against Princeton was 8, was the final.
Was it that many?
But it wasn't an 8-point
game.
No, I was
going to say, if we had made that right-handed layup, that would have been helpful.
Right, and, you know, one was double overtime, one was overtime,
mm-hmm.
You know. So it sort of shapes up all the world like it's going to be a fairly competitive Ivy League tournament,
mm-hmm.
and it's a one-bid league. So
especially this year.
So, yeah, for this year, I meant. So mm-hmm. how does that play, if at all, into preparations as you move forward? Obviously, you have to get there.
Yeah, you have to get there.
Obviously, you want to win the championship.
Which I'm going to lean on you, Jerry, to tell me when we clinch that, because you're way better at numbers and math than
me. It won't be this weekend.
Really? Even if we win both? Okay.
Even if you know, Penn and Princeton sweep, Harvard Yale loser wins the other game, and then the Harvard Yale winner goes 2-0. Even if those things happen, mathematically the other teams can still get back in it.
So yeah, well, I'll wait till you tell me we're in, and then I'll worry about the tournament. But
is that really true? I mean, like, do you?
You know, we kind of know who's going to be in it. I hate to say that, but you have a pretty good sense. You also know that the teams that aren't yet in it, currently in the race, they've got nothing to lose because they have to throw everything at you and they have to do something different than they did the last time they played you. And they're kind of playing with house money because they might not make the Ivy tournament, but if they beat one of the top teams, they can build momentum into their year ahead. So
it's actually, you know, the men's side has the same thing. There's a 2-game drop from 4th place to 5th place.
Same 4 teams. Oh, no, Cornell
no,
is in
Cornell.
It for...
And Penn is
instead of Penn. Okay.
But the thing that makes the men's team different is, would it shock anybody if Penn won out? You know, Penn's the defending champ. They're the Big Five champ. They're 4-0 in the Philadelphia games. So it really wouldn't shock anybody if Penn won out. So you have that sort of behind you trying to make the run.
I see.
Whereas in the case of the women's side, and again, we don't want to slight Cornell and Columbia. Obviously, they're coming here and they're going to play to win and get back into the race.
Of course.
But over the course of the way the season has developed, it looks like there's a bit of separation between mm-hmm. the top four and the bottom four.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point, are you starting to think, you know, it's almost like matchups matter more than where you finish.
But there's nothing you can do about that.
Right.
Because for sure, the matchups, I mean, playing Yale at Yale, I'm not sure anybody's super psyched about doing that in the first round of the tournament. We had to do it each of the last two tournaments. We had to play, I should say, the home team. So it's hard to avoid it when they're in it. And so you just sort of, there's nothing we can do about matchups because the only way you can manipulate them, I guess, is to control, you know, you try to win. And if a loss is better for a matchup, do you throw the game? Like, that's
well,
just not what we do.
That.
Exactly. That's just not what you're going to do. So
you can only do that if you get a draft pick out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we're just, there's nothing you can do about that. I think we just, because of that, you know kind of what you're going to see, but it comes down to how we're going to play, and you want to play your best basketball and be your healthiest at the right time.
Do you have to do anything different this weekend knowing you have another game on Tuesday, so like try to limit minutes?
I mean, it would be great if we don't have to rely on, I mean, it's a team because everybody contributes, right? And so I think we have great depth. It doesn't matter what I think we have. It matters what shows up on the stat sheet, right? And that's what we learned after Yale is that it doesn't matter if Bella has 38 if other guys are not putting pressure on the defense or putting pressure on the other team's offense with taking charges or rebounding. So I hope we get, the more contributions we get, the better we are, whether it's a 1 game a week or 3 games in 5 days. And so we're continually urging along the pieces to be what they are, which is an important, critical part of our team.
And they're double headers this weekend. Obviously, the men are home.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about this enough that mm-hmm. we both like the double headers.
No, I remember I'm on record. I like the double header if I play first.
Yes.
And so I go from loving the doubleheader when I play first. So I'm with Mitch on this. If he plays first, he doesn't care if it's a doubleheader. If he plays second, he hates it. And if I play second, I hate it too.
Well, from my perspective, I just like having both games in the same building on the same night. And
no doubt, there's a lot of advantages to it.
And it's a busy weekend. It's a there's 35 Princeton athletic events. Mm-hmm. Not all home, obviously, but Saturday there's.
So we played at 5 o'clock at Dartmouth on a Saturday night. We got into Jadwin at 1:30. In the morning on Saturday. Imagine if that game started at 7:30.
I've left Dartmouth's gym at 10:30 on a
Saturday. So if you leave, if you start at 8, which is about when you're going to start if you play the first game at 5, you're not getting out of there until 10:30 or so. I mean, at some point it's a safety issue. You know, it's just playing that late. If you're going to do doubleheaders, you've got to start them earlier. You just have to.
Yeah, so Saturday is Columbia here. So Cornell's at Penn. Yep. So the Cornell men play 8 o'clock at Penn. So, I mean, that's a long ride. That's a five, six hour ride to Cornell. So.
Yeah. Yep. We just did it last weekend, and we'll have to do it again when we go to Yale Brown. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah. So it's the women at 5:30, the men at 8. It's Cornell Friday night. It's Columbia Saturday night. And then it's at the Palestra Tuesday. I should have looked what time that game is. 7?
7, yeah. So the men are bringing back Earl on Friday, and we're bringing back Meg Griffith on Saturday. That's kind of neat that we can. I know Mitch and I take great pride in the coaching tree that we've established, and to have two of our own here in the gym will be cool.
It's really hard to root against Brian Earl, but we find.
Oh my gosh, I think I spent of the pregame warm up that we had on the clock of. I usually come out about 20 minutes left. I think I talked to him until the 2 minute mark. It was so awesome to talk to him. He's such a great guy. Everybody here who knows him knows he's doing a great job, and he's just a real guy. I laughed more than I talked, and I left being like, God, I just always loved Brian Earl.
He has a 2,000 point score.
Was he?
No, not here.
He has Morgan. Yeah.
He was a 1,400.
He's a baller, and he's, like I always say, you look like a nerd, but you're such a baller, and he kind of says those were the days. But
Brian Earl was a 1,428-point scorer.
Oh, wow. You
he
would know that.
283
that's what I mean.
Made three-pointers, which I believe...
Is that more than me?
Might have been more than you.
That's crap. Well, I have more than Bella, so don't forget that.
So we will talk about the weekend, and then we will also talk about the Penn game.
Oh, yeah, there'll be a lot by the next time.
Yes, so we'll be back next Wednesday.
Go Tigers.
So you have your choice. We could do it Tuesday to talk before the Penn game.
No.
Or we could do it Wednesday after the Penn game.
Let's do it Wednesday. We'll have a lot to share.
Okay, so Wednesday after the Penn game, we'll be back. We'll talk about those three games. We'll talk about next week. We're looking ahead to Harvard and Dartmouth. But this week it's Cornell Friday night, Columbia Saturday night, and then Penn away on Tuesday, and doubleheaders with the men. And a lot of busy stuff here this weekend. The Ivy League Swimming Championships are here. A lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Men's lacrosse home opener. So make sure you get out to support the Princeton teams and especially the basketball teams for the doubleheaders.
Sounds great.
And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
So for Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Bankhart, I am Jerry Price, thanking you for being with us each week on the Court Report. And thank you for your continued support of Princeton women's basketball.